Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SFB Online, Fed Come Along, and Starfleet Warlord. Justin Weiner had to join us. We have a podcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you want to, you can also go to twitch.tv/SFU on call and you will find the live stream there. I will be happy to chat with anyone who's in the chat room. Obviously, you need a Twitch account to chat with me. Otherwise, you can just watch and listen to my wonderful voice and face. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is sfuoncall. And of course, my personal account there is also Paul France. It's PAULFRNZ. I talk about tech and being Catholic. So just a warning if you want to follow me there. But, of course, I have a tertiary account called France Games, which is for my business. I invariably will tweet out anything related to my France Games company. And, of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. Steve Cole is mainly just working on what he's been working on for a while, which is the SFB module SSJ3, which is called The Shadow of the Eagle, and, of course, the blogs. And Steve Patrick was busy working on the Tholian Master Starship book and Gene on the Call to Arms Starfleet book 2, and also making sure people are happy on Facebook. I'm happy to talk to people on Facebook, and of course managing the Twitter feed on Twitter, and also making sure that spam keeps down to nothing on the BBS. Moving on more and forward to the Star Sapphire 2 tournament. The game has not actually I'm pretty sure the game has not been played in that, and hopefully we will see a result very, very, very soon. As soon as I find out, if I find out that they have appointment all scheduled, I will announce it here if it's within time. Or otherwise, I will definitely report at the very least the results. And moving onward to the library report, not much going on there. With the complete converter still staying at 2,519 and yet to be completed is 811, leaving a percent complete of 75.65%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul France, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight is just me and Dave, and I think I saw Mike over in the TalkShoe chat room, which I'm more than happy to chat with people today, because Lord have mercy, this is going to be interesting tonight, just because of, Barry's not going to be here, and I am completely unprepared for tonight, but I figure we'll come up with something wonderful to discuss, whether it is F&E, and whether, you know, maybe we should create a simpler version of F&E, or possibly a new empire to the SFB universe that we could possibly, well, one, is it needed? Usually the answer to that question is, of course, no. But when it comes to the thing, I think it was Companion, I think it might have been Companion Games that had the other ideas about empires for the Starfleet universe, which were basically nixed. Then, to say the least, it was not good. So, Don't mind me. For those people, there it is. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that I was... I think that's a little better for me. I want to be a little closer to the middle of the screen so I can see my beautiful face. But anyhow, moving onward and forward. Why don't we start with that, the first topic that I had expressed, which is F&E. Because also, Mike, if you want to, I'm also on Twitch, SFU On Call, you know, Twitch/TV. You can... You can see me there, and also my video recordings are there. Also, I put up my recordings on YouTube after I've trimmed them. Currently, there's only one missing episode because of there was a minor issue. My mic whole setup was doing something which I thought was an issue with the other side, in this case, Andrew, but it was on my side. And that means it got recorded, and I was not about to try to release it in that sad state of affairs. But moving onward and forward onto the F&E topic, the whole idea of a simplified game of F&E, you know, because come on, I SFB and F&E both aren't really for the faint of heart. They are definitely not a beer and pretzels game. But for those people who truly enjoy the ability, you know, to have the detailed rules, because I'm not gonna say it's complicated, because overall, it's not really that complicated. Ooh. You know, because you can boil it all down, really. Okay. Ah, there he is. Okay. Hey, Andrew, how you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good, good. Do I sound better this time?
Oh, yeah. It actually seems to be working great.
Yeah, I found out later after the show was over that it was me. It was completely me. So that means the recording was crap. And basically, I had to chuck it. I had to put it in the trash.
How many computer guys does it take to figure this out, right?
Yeah. Very true.
Well, fortunately, I think last time we pretty much just... went off the rails anyway, so.
true. We did go off the rails in certain fashion. I will agree with that. But at the same time,
we did have a good time,
right? All right, and half of the recording was, you know, was on topic, so it was still good stuff. It's just that with the way my voice was recorded, it's like no, I can't have that kind of quality when it comes to audio. Because, yeah, the video, you can be forgiven for bad video. You can't be forgiven for bad audio. Because even, you know, because the question is, how many people actually watch my video? Because what's my video? Most of the time, it's just me. Possibly, of course, I share my screen. And in the case of the different Omega of empires we've been going around, you know, you can see what kind of ships we're talking about and things like that. But overall, it's not that exciting. And Lord knows I get the...
Does it even show on TalkShoe?
Excuse me?
I'm just wondering, can you even see it if you're logging in through TalkShoe?
You mean the video?
Yeah.
No. I've in theory, I could stream the video, I think. But that means that I'm not sure how that would work. I might try that, you know. The question is how many people would be want to see see it on.
Yeah, I mean, it's no big deal. I just was curious because it seems like it asks me if I want to show my camera or my screen, but it doesn't give me an option to see anything else.
Oh, yeah. And as it is, the one big issue for watching video would be my setup. I'm not sure how that would work. Because currently the way I have the whole setup for the podcast, this is a little behind the scenes kind of thing, is that I've got Audio Hijack Pro, and what I got is a call into TalkShoe via Skype, and then also I record my mic, so if you're watching the video, you'll see this, locally, and then that comes in, and basically there's two channels. I've got my recording is on the left channel, and your side is on the right channel. Now, obviously, the way if I do video, I'd be recording everything directly through the browser. Now, given that, I am not sure how that would work when it comes to multiple people and well, actually not the multiple people, but the multiple streams and recording it and that kind of thing. I'd have to investigate it because currently I am streaming on Twitch. Twitch, I've got both the video camera because I'm using OBS at the moment to stream to Twitch and recording locally. Now, I can't do that. I can't use that same software to send to TalkShoe because TalkShoe doesn't support that. So I'm not sure. Obviously, I wouldn't be able to do certain things. Like what I have on Twitch is you have in the upper right-hand corner, you see my lovely face. And the rest of it is basically is a screencast. You know, what I have currently up on my screen. Now, I'm not sure how TalkShoe would work, whether it would be purely be one of those things like Zoom. Because what Zoom does is Zoom either shows your face or it shows the screen. You can't do both. So.
Yeah, I hated Zoom. We used that at my last job. But, you know, I tried doing the Twitch one day on the big screen while I did TalkShoe on the MacBook, and it didn't work out so well. But I suppose the guests probably don't want to hear about that. So sorry I distracted you from the topic.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. You know, it's all good. It's still in my mind, still part of the podcast, you know, because it's just a little behind the scenes thing about, you know, how I have my setup currently, how I record and how, you know, what my distributions are, you know, which is currently.
Yeah. Plus I remember you from Facebook and Origins. So
that's one thing.
I'm watching Arizona versus Oregon. So, you know, the big screen's preoccupied tonight anyway.
Understood. Yeah. What was your big problem with the big screen? I'm assuming that,
Just something, the Roku client for Twitch doesn't seem to have like a way to browse. So if the channel I want to find isn't like right there, like I had no way to get to your channel.
Wow.
And I wasn't even sure like if the Twitch client was even official. I don't think it is.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of those things where it's like, I tried it for a while and then it's like, okay, you know, I know what Paul looks like. I'll move on.
Okay. Yeah, because as I said, you know, for most times, that's where my because there is a chat room, but I think Dave, I forget if I think Dave checked this out, which is whether you could actually go to Twitch and actually participate in the chat and not be a Twitch member, you know, actually have an account.
Yeah, I mean, I could have done that on the MacBook, but the MacBook was for, you know, I was using that for TalkShoe and actually talking to you. Mm-hmm. And then I was hoping to put the video on the TV through the Roku box, but, right. You know, whatever. Oh, yeah. It didn't work.
Understood. Yeah, Mike Bennett in the TalkShoe chat room, as you, I see that you actually have been chatting with him. Mentioned, you know, that you couldn't get to the chat room and Twitch, and yeah, the problem is that you have to have an account to actually chat. And I am keeping an eye on the Twitch chat room. So just in case someone comes up, I'll be happy to maybe not type in a reply, but maybe, you know, do at least an audio. But moving forward, on and forward.
Yeah, like I get what you're saying. Yeah, Paul's great, but the Oregon cheerleaders are better looking. So tonight, it's just TalkShoe.
Oh, geez. Actually, one thing I finished up today, right before now, well, during supper, is that I finished the very last episode, the final episode of Deep Space Nine. I really enjoyed the show, you know, and I got to see the final.
You've never seen it before?
I've seen it on and off, but I never seen all the episodes.
Yeah, I do have to say I love Deep Space Nine, and I think it was like last weekend or something, they had the like Star Trek's Greatest Battles, mm-hmm. which was, I think it was on BBC America. And like most of the great fleet battles were in DS9.
Oh,
it was good.
Oh yeah, well come on, a lot of the series was involved the war with the Dominion. You know.
Yeah, and, I mean it was great.
Well, we have a chat room test and it is successful. I see. Team Blake M. I'm not sure who that is.
Yeah, but I think the thing about DS9 that really impressed me most was that I really, like, when it came out back when I was actually in college the first time, I thought it was going to be one of those, let's jump through the wormhole and see what we find today kind of shows. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. And it wasn't Happy Trek. You know, it's like it wasn't all Fluffy Bunny at the end of the day. I mean, it was, I love that series.
Yeah. Me too. And actually one of the things that got me interested in watching the whole thing was that invariably I go to iTunes and I look at movies. And one of the things I found was the documentary on Deep Space Nine and how, you know, Deep Space Nine is a, you know, it's a fan favorite. You know, there's a lot of fans about it because of Deep Space Nine was much different than some of the other Star Trek TV series. You know, so that's why it got me interested. I have not watched the documentary yet, but I will be doing that shortly. So. Because as is the strange thing. Let's put it that way, because it was an actor's death. The guy who played Odo, he died in the past month. So,
and yeah, that was kind of sad.
Yeah, agreed. Very sad. But to me, the great thing about that actor was that I was happy to see that he actually was involved in other TV series. It wasn't like some actors where they're, you know, an actor in one of the Star Trek series and that's where they remain. You never see them in any other TV series. You know?
Yeah, actually, yeah, he had quite a career before that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the way his character was done through the makeup, a lot of people, I don't even think they knew.
Mm-hmm. Remember Vic Fontaine?
I mean, I remember watching Benson growing up, you know, at late night TV.
Oh, geez, Benson, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was the lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're right. Wow. Blast from the past. I totally forgot that he played that role.
And the Obscurity Award goes to...
Yeah, because I was thinking about one of the TV series that he had been involved in, in the past, 5 years. And they mentioned it. I totally forget it at this moment. But actually, one thing I got started getting involved in, that was one of the things I thought was really neat with Deep Space Nine, which was the hologram slash, hologram basically Vic Fontaine, and how they integrated that character into Deep Space Nine. It was obviously the person who played that name of James Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, Darren, James Darren. And he actually did sing. His most famous song was from his Gidget. He sung all.
Oh, geez, that goes back.
Yeah, that goes way back. And I was actually reading about it, that part, and they actually, what was it? They offered it to, Blue Eyes. Oh, forget. Jeez, I remember. The guy. The singer named Blue Eyes, was his nickname. Frank.
Sinatra?
Sinatra, yeah. Junior. His is actually his son, Junior.
Okay, Junior. Yeah. Okay, I was like, no. Dude, he's been in a long time.
Oh, I know, but it was Frank Sinatra Junior. They offered it to him, and he didn't go for it. But, because of that, actually, I bought a couple records of James Darren, because I kind of like the music, So,
yeah, people have to stop turning down roles in Star Trek. That's goes up with top five biggest career mistakes of all time.
Right. Oh yeah. And the thing is, Vic Fontaine, I love that character. I just love that character. So anyhow. Yeah, Mike, you have to phone in. That's the only way to talk. Yeah, because actually, as I already told Drew here, I call in via Skype. And that's because I actually have a Skype. I'm one of those rare individuals who actually bought a Skype subscription. So, it's a free call in.
Yeah, I got it. One, too.
Yeah. Hey,
just for the record, right. I got it just to call in to talk to you for you.
Wow.
I mean, I literally use it for nothing else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was sad when they broke it, basically. They broke Skype. So previously I could chain people in. I could call in. And then I could add people to my group. I say, oh, add this person, and make it a group call and have it so that people could call me via their Skype ID. And then I would be access kind of access point in to call in to talk to you. So it'd be a shared stream between all of us. And Microsoft broke Skype, so that is the when you're in a group, you can't use the numeric keypad. So I can't select, I can't make the proper tones.
It wasn't just in a group. I was having trouble on the PC for a while when I tried to call in. I could dial it, but then when it said, enter in the the program number,
right,
then, you know, I could hit the keys and it would make noise, but it wouldn't. It would then say, you know, please enter the call ID,
right,
over and over again.
Right. It basically says that's not a correct call ID. Now, one thing, actually, I was typing in incorrect today, but previously, that the phone center would actually repeat back to you going, oh, this is what I heard. You know, because sometimes the biggest problem with using Skype and those tones is that sometimes those tones don't quite work. So you can't type those the numbers in too fast. Because you type it in too fast, then it doesn't hear it right. You know, I think it's the fidelity. In some cases, I'm sure it's the fidelity of the line. I'm not sure if it's an issue with Skype or an issue with the dial-in to TalkShoe. Not sure which. So, anyhow, when we get on to the topic I was discussing before we started talking about the podcast and DS9, squirrel. that is F&E. A simplified version of F&E. Do we need it? You know, obviously we don't need it, but the question is, would more people be interested in SFB, you know, the Starfleet universe, or at least, you know, F&E type kind of game in the Starfleet universe where it's simplified, i.e. take what they did with Starfleet Battles and them creating Federation Commander, which is kind of SFB light, but don't ever say that to Steve Cole because he says it's not SFB light. But, you know, overall, it kind of is. But there are obviously certain things that were modified between SFB and FedCom when it comes to that are quite, you know, the dynamic is definitely different between the two. You know, for FedCom, you're limited on the amount of reinforcement that you actually can have. Simple. You know, there is no in FedCom, there is no phaser capacitors. So you have your phaser capacitor is how much of unused energy you have. You know, so you can't do what you do in SFB. You know, sock away the phasers into your capacitor, and then do a battle run where you have a lot more power available to you. That's not possible in FedCom because the rules are quite a bit different. Now, and there are certain things that that do not exist. You know, wild weasels, shotgun plasmas. That's what I'm talking about. Are enveloping plasmas. Those don't exist in FedCom. They're simplified, which is understandable. But you still have, but those torpedoes are still, you know, we still have multi-turn army weapons, which in my mind is one of those things that really changes it from being a beer and more of a beer and pretzels game, a simple, more simplified version than, you know, compared to SFB. Because, yeah, the thing is, in my mind, the whole idea of FedCom is that you didn't have an energy allocation, really. You what you did is you set, the only thing you needed to do during the turn, during the initial thing, is you might put some power to repairs, might, but most of it is just, okay, how fast do you want to go? And that takes your energy, that takes that amount of energy away from how much you have available. Okay, fine. But when you add multi-turn upbring weapons to the Federation Commander, then you actually have an actual EA. You have to track how much, you have to decide what you're going to allocate power for weapons versus speed, movement. You actually have to allocate energy versus if you stuck purely to single turn arming weapons, you fire and that's it. And you use the amount of energy that you need and you fire it. So, you know, in that case, it's simple. Yes, there is still that thought processes that, okay, you still have to decide how fast you want to go, how much energy you want to have available for both power, for both weapons, and possibly if you want to tractor something, you know, some other possible scenarios when it comes to what you can do. You might have to think about that. But you don't have to allocate. Those are just ideas. So you have a general idea on what to do, how much energy you need to put into movement. But as soon as FedCom got multi-turn army weapons, I mean, where you actually have to allocate energy, that changed it. Now, I think I've talked about the idea of having FedCom only have single-turn army weapons. But that doesn't work, really. Because of if you try to have it so there's multi-turn armings, all that energy you put into it is collapsed to one single turn. In that case, that won't work. Because now every time you want to fire that weapon, it's like you have to go so slow. It's like you might as well just stop. Stop, fire. Okay, next turn you can move. You know, so, and I think last time I talked about that, I definitely gave Ken Burnside kudos because of he created kind of an SAB version, which never got released, of his gaming system. Where the idea was that instead of using energy, you use action points. Based on how many action points you use is, you know, for that weapon. And in the case of like photons, you only need so many action points to fire that weapon. But you only could fire once every other turn. So you said you had the track that you had fired last turn. So you can't fire, you know, you fired last turn, so now you can fire this turn. Or if you fired the last turn, you can't fire this turn. And I think that greatly simplifies things. Now, you know, that means a real big change in the way FedCom would have worked. And definitely it would no longer be kind of SFB light, you know. FedCom is closely related to SFB because of that. You know, it still has all the weapons. Now some of the weapons don't act the same as they do in SFB. Case in point, ESGs. You know, They no longer have the glowing ball globe that you're running around trying to ram people with, you know, things like that. The Andromedan, their systems work quite a bit differently, and I've already done a review on that, and that's kind of crazy. But coming back to F&E, could we do the same thing that we did for SAB the FedCom? Probably we could. The question is, what form would that take? Because of anyone who's familiar with F&E, I'm familiar with it. I can't play it, but I'm familiar with the rules enough because actually I've been working with a guy to help implement an F&E kind of thing for as an online edition, you know, web browser based. So we're working on it together. And with F&E, you know, I think you could, a lot of the rules you could simplify. Now, the question is, where do you draw the line? Do you draw the line when it comes to a simplified version of F&E? Do you try to stick to the more historical playing of F&E? The idea being is, okay, that your ships arrive on a schedule. And then, you know, you can buy things that are on that schedule. You know, when the whole idea of being that the ships were designed and created at a certain schedule. So overall, it simulates the whole idea of the, you know, not the whole idea, but the whole rolling of the general war, the whole, you're playing out the general war. But you get to choose what ships you do, you know, what strategies and tactics you use against, you know, your opponent, the other team. So that is possible. You would probably keep the schedule because it's not that difficult to do, and it keeps the game rolling through. But you know, certain things you'd probably want to get rid of. Certain things like conversions, maybe some. I was thinking upgrades, but in some cases, some of the stuff would have to still stay there. Now, I think some of the things that they have where you, instead of building, I think, like, you can switch out, instead of building like a cruiser, you can build two frigates or something like that. But so things like that would have to be removed, you know, simplify the rules to a great degree. My guess is you'd probably stick when it comes to this overall same basic combat, though you might want even that you could simplify down to be more along the lines of Starfleet Warlord, where Starfleet Warlord, basically, you don't worry about control, command and control, and so you're not limited, and so you just have a group of your fleet. Now, you might want to say, okay, well, we don't have any command and control, but yet there live an artificial way of doing that, of doing command and control, is limit the size of the fleet. Say, well, there's only so many ships that can actually coordinate together. So we're going to say, okay, the max size of your fleet is 10 ships, and that's it. And the ships will have different functions and so forth. But, so it could be done. But, you know, obviously all this rigmarole to get to have it so that you could have a simplified version of F&E, would that actually help bring more people into the Starfleet universe? Is, you know, that the strategy game like that really what people want? You know, because at the moment, you know, I'm Gamers Winter is coming up in not this weekend, but next weekend. So it's coming very, very soon. And I'm going to be there, and I'm actually going to replay the game, you know, redo the game, what's we call it? The game test, the play test of the game on Merchants of the Federation. Because I think we got a better idea of how that rolls. I should be able to work through it this week and play another game where actually I used the rules the way it was designed to be played, and hopefully we can have fun, some fun with it, and better have a better understanding. Oh, okay. Just for those people who are on the podcast and to don't see the video, where Mike was mentioning, how about for a simpler version of Effney, why not try something with a similar design as War at Sea or Victory in the Pacific? These are a couple of Avalon Hill oldies, and Avalon Hill is oldies. That simulate the naval campaigns of the Battle of the Atlantic and Pacific War during World War II, area movement, individual ships. That might be a good idea. I'm not familiar with those games from Avalon Hill. I would have to take a look see at it. And Mike, you might have a good idea, because the original Starfleet Battle Force. Whew. Having a hard time remembering some of the games. Was based off of the same kind of concept of, meaning, it was a World War II ship fleet, battle game. Yeah, Avalon Hill did have some great games. Tactics 2 is one that I remember playing with my friend. Naval War. Yeah, thank you, Mike. Because I forgot the name of it, but I remember that it was based off of another card game, which is, which is great.
So, if I can interject here for a second.
By means.
Just one of the things that I always think is missing whenever these discussions tend to crop up is, what is the actual problem you're trying to solve? Because, I've seen people play F&E at Origins, and, they've got a whole huge room, and they stay there all weekend, and they never come out. People bring food, and it's they seem to have fun with that.
Oh, yeah.
So when we're talking about a simplified version of F&E, what's the goal? Are we trying to, have the same... Because when people play games like that, those are the tactical kind of games. Like I used to play them on the computer, like Master of Orion. I love those games.
Right.
They call them the 4X games.
Right.
You know. So you got games like that with lots of complexity, and to a point, there's the enjoyment is some of that complexity. So are you trying to have a game that has that complexity, but you could actually finish it in a night? Or are you looking for a game where you still have the epic scope of the general war, but you can finish it in a night?
Yeah,
that's the kind of thing. It's that kind of determines what direction do you go? Do I want to make the rules like for example, maybe I only care about the whole greater picture, the general war, but I really don't care about the individual battles. So maybe what I want to do is make it so that if I send this fleet against this fleet, we can resolve that battle in 20 seconds. Or maybe what I want is I want a big campaign thing where I can play the battles individually with Starfleet battles or FedCom. So I'm not so interested about all of the empire building stuff. I'm just looking for a campaign engine, to be a wrapper for my individual fleet battles.
Right.
That those are going to be the things I spend time on. So I don't care if the game takes 6 weeks, I just don't want to spend 20 hours on my, empire keeping turn.
Oh, understood.
So it's kind of, but I mean, like I said, that's a question that needs to be answered before you can really even get into the
details.
How?
Yes.
Because it's where do we tweak it? I mean, FedCom has a lot of complexities as far as building the fleets and the economics and all that stuff, but you know, maybe that's the part you enjoy. You know, that, and that's where it kind of gets into it. But like, I had always, like, one of my ultimate dreams was always to play a game of Fed Empire, but resolve all the battles through Starfleet battles.
Talk about
well,
taking decades.
Yeah. That'll probably take like 300 years more than my life expectancy. You know, especially, you know, coordinating the schedules for the play schedule, you know, so it's kind of like, you know, what are you trying to do? I mean, FedCom seemed to me to be, I want to take two starships and have a battle that I can resolve in less than 8 hours.
Right.
You know, well, cause like, you know, I'm doing a campaign right now, the SFB drama campaign, and we have just been going round and round about how many escorts can an Ulan carrier have. And I don't know if that's the only thing holding up the next turn, but it's like seriously, I'm sorry. When I saw SFB drama, I didn't think it was a legal drama. You know? I mean, I'm loving it. Don't get me wrong, Matt, you know, he's running a great thing.
Right.
But, you know, it's like I'm rolling my eyes like, what? And I think that's one of the things FedCom was trying to avoid was the, you know, the game only took 4 hours, but we spent 6 hours debating rule, you know, S81. You know, it's like, so they, you know, they obviously the idea was to go simpler,
right,
on the options that were available to you. You know, if that's what you want to do with a different version of Fed Empire, that's great. But on the other hand, maybe the idea, you know, for people who love the complexity, just not the how long it takes. It's like maybe the focus should be on streamlining the process, you know, so that you can still have the complexity. You just don't need as much time to get there.
Right. Oh, understood.
So it's, you know, it's like I said, it's one of those things where, you know, some of these discussions put the cart before the horse.
Mm-hmm. Understood. But I think Mike hit it on the head, which he just mentioned that the goal is to, one, attract new players that would be put off by the complexity of F&E. And also, you know, yes, and the whole idea is not to generate, not basically as a campaign level for, you know, a strategic level for a campaign, where then you would use that, the interactions at a strategic level to denote what your scenarios will be for played out in SFB, because Lord knows, to be honest about that, I've heard many people wanting to do that, and it ends up being, it's like, you're nuts. Who was it? The Void War, I think it was. Yeah, the Void War, yeah. That's Aaron Staley came up with. And basically, these were small battles. These were really, really small battles. These were three ships, maybe four. And invariably, he had to create a battle resolution system for the campaign to keep the campaign going, because the idea was not to bog down the campaign so that each turn took like 3 months to play. You know, the one, you know,
yeah.
So in that case, you know, the whole idea was to keep the campaign going so that we could go, you know, go through a turn, maybe, you know, one every 2 weeks, you know, but a reasonable amount of time. But as Mike pointed out, you know, the whole idea of a simplified F&E would be have the epic scope of the war. Go through the whole general war in one night. Possibly, you know.
Okay.
So anyway, we're from like maybe like 2 to 3 hours.
Okay, yeah, because that's like, I wasn't sure if this was like how far along this was in discussion, because, you know, Mike also mentions that the goal is to attract players who would be turned off by the complexity.
Right.
But at the same time, I could point out that some people would like the complexity of like the turn planning. like, you know, I might like to spend hours planning my turn, but maybe not resolving all of the silly little battles. Like,
right.
You know, I take great time planning the turn, but then I want the turn to execute quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Starfleet battles, you know, you have your energy allocation. How long does that take? And then playing out that turn, that could take a long time.
Right, right.
Many times, you know. So it's like maybe I'm okay with spending an hour on energy allocation, but I want the turn done in 15 minutes.
Oh, agreed.
You know, as opposed to the other way around. So, I mean, I didn't know, like, if this was, like, an ongoing thing that, you know, everyone had a idea on except me, or, you know, whether we were putting the cart before the horse with the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like getting caught before the horse. You know, well, I know what, as Mike's pointing out, you know, that I think that that's the kind of goal that I'm looking for, which is a simplified version that people can be more interested in. Don't feel like as a steep of a curve. Now, to me, F&E is just like SFB in that you look at the rules, you go, whoa, that's a lot of rules. But it's like SFB, and that is a lot of those rules are about interactions between different systems. And I feel like F&E is the same way, that a lot of those rules are just interactions with the system. You know, a lot of it's, if you simple, you can actually simplify the interactions down. And it's not, they're not that complicated overall. Now, when it comes to speeding up play, the tough part, here's always the tough part. And FedCom tried its darndest to speed up SFB play, but it failed pretty awfully. Because the whole, you know, because Andrew, you remember, you know how FedCom has it. We have the fleet scale and the squadron scale, right?
Yeah, the fleet scale was, I don't even know.
The fleet scale, the whole idea of fleet scale was to speed up play, to have a larger fleet that you could get completed a lot faster. Well, what's the problem with the fleet scale? The problem with the fleet
scale? It's just basically, yeah, playing smaller ships.
Right. Well, no, basically, you decreased the everything. Everything got in half. So you're only firing half the weapons and so forth. But because you're halving the weapons, having the defense, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, plus if you're playing fleet scale, you probably have 2 to 3 times the ships. So
at
the end of the day, you're probably making the problem worse.
Well, the whole idea was that you could play with 2 to 3 times as number of ships compared to squadron scale and be done in the same amount of time. So a squadron scale, you know, for like 3 ships might take 2 hours. That's probably not true. It's probably close to 3.
Yeah, I just pretty much pretend it doesn't exist.
Right. And so the whole idea was a fleet battle, you know, you could actually do the same thing, 3 hours, but you could play with like 9 ships per side and you could get it done in 3 hours. No, it doesn't change that at all. Because the problem is that it doesn't change the dynamic at all. You know?
Yeah, I think you know, like, I've played FedCom a few times. I like it. I bought a lot of the stuff, you know. But to me, it's one of those things where it's like, I really have to think too hard about the differences between the two games.
Well,
you
grew up with SFB, right?
You know, it's just, yeah. Like, since I was way too young to actually understand the rules, I've been playing it. And it's like, okay, so I'm trying to play it with somebody, even somebody who's never played Starfleet Battles, and it's like I have to think too hard. It's like, no, you can't do this. You have to, no, stop. You have to do this. And so it's like halfway through, I just want to think like I'm playing Starfleet Battles. And
right, and you
can't. That's kind of why I stopped playing. It just, you know, I'm an old model. My swap file's corrupted. My memory's, you know, not as big as these youngins today. You know, I always end up starting a game of FedCom and then having to remind myself I'm not playing Starfleet Battles.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree that I have the same kind of issue with playing FedCom, but at the same time, I can get more people interested in playing FedCom than I can SFB, to be honest. Usually when I play Games of Winter, I do SFB with Barry, but we've played some FedCom too. Just because that's one thing I do offer.
Yeah, I'm going to try to show up for that.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'll be there with all of my stuff.
I can't promise anything because our project went totally south that we have to deploy on the 9th of February. But, you know, I do get ML King Day off. So if I can pull it off, I'll be there.
Okay. Okay. I'm usually not there on ML King Day. Just to let you know.
I mean, that might be my travel day, but I'm just saying,
right,
I might be able to make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll be there Saturday and Sunday all day. Mike was mentioned, asking if there's a simpler, battle resolution for F&E. I don't think there is. And to be honest, I don't think most of the time is taken with battle resolution. I think battle resolution is overall pretty quick. And I agree. He said the one problem with fleet scale when it comes to FedCom is that one weapon resolution is supposed to equal two weapons in squadron scale. Roll a one and you get a great result. In squadron scale, you roll a one and a six and you get drastically different results. Yeah. Basically, the whole problem with... I'm thinking about the weapon systems that they disallowed in tournament play, because basically the whole idea is that all your weapons are based on one die roll. I forget what that was. But FedCom almost fulfilled its mission.
Narasalvo?
Yeah, Narasalvo. That's it. Thank you. FedCom almost fulfills its mission if you use introductory rules that are free. Yeah. I agree that FedCom definitely fulfills its mission when it comes to introducing more people into the SFU universe when it comes to tactical play. I agree there. I think that, at least I've seen this when it comes to board games, is that I've seen, I'm really bad with names of games that I haven't seen for a while. Galactic Conquest, but it's not Galactic Conquest. There's a board game, which basically it is, it's, you know, a 4X for the most part. Where you have each empire has their own fleets that they create and they build them up and you travel around the board. And I think that, you know, a simplified version of F&E could fulfill the same kind of role. Simplified battles. Now, the tough part about the speeding up of play is, in my mind, part of what slows down play in F&E, and I'm not talking about energy allocation, but it's not energy allocation. It's the economic forms, how much you're going to spend on construction, conversions, and all that kind of thing. I think a lot of it is actually movement, because we have the whole issue where you move, and then depending upon, if you get too close to your opponent, then they get to react. And then after you move, then your opponent gets to do reactive movement and actually move his ships. If you want to get faster, in my mind, is you have to take it and simplify that down. You say, okay, no reactive movement. You know, now the question is, do you still keep, you move and then your opponent moves? Or do you do what Lord knows I like, which is asynchronous play? The whole idea is that you plan your movements, where the fleets are going to go, and then you reveal it afterwards. And you both move at the same time, and then any place where you're actually next to each other or in the same hexes, then you can have a conflict, you know, a battle in that case. I know there's some issues with that, because if you allow it on chasing hexes, then something like a fleet that normally can only move six hexes could move seven, because it could, to actually battle, it'd have to move into the adjacent hex, possibly. You know, but, you know, little things like that could be worked out. But, you know, I think, you know, having more people playing the SFU universe would be nice. And having a game that you actually could finish in a night would even be better. You know, do the whole general war in one evening. I think that'd be great. So, you know, and as Mike pointed out earlier on, there's already, well, it's not out yet, which is the Federation Admiral, which is supposed to be for campaign. It's supposed to be a simplified version of F&E to a certain degree. And battle, it's basically a campaign/battle generator. You know, have you ever, Andrew, have you ever read the Campaigner's Design Manual, or at least looked at it?
No, actually, I wanted to buy it, but never got around to it. I thought I had bought it from the local game store, but can't seem to find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I find it really interesting. Some of the ideas, you know, with tech levels and the whole idea of what is used actually in Starfleet Warlord, warp gates. You know, instead of having it so that your ships are built a certain system, one way of delivering them is to have warp gates, so that you maybe have a central facility where you build your ships, and then you have warp gates, which you can then put in the different systems, and so the ships are delivered there. Or that's also one way of getting from system to system. What was it? The one that was run by Dale. There was a camp. I forget.
Not familiar.
Dark Empires, I think it was, or something like that. But the whole idea was, it was, you basically had system to system to system. They were all connected, and then you would decide whether you come into a system, and via this kind of warp line into the system, and then you would either do a battle or see what's there and just run. You know, and that's the way it was exploring, instead of doing the whole a tactical board game, you know, where you actually have area of movement and all that kind of thing. You know, obviously F&E is meant for a tactical board game. Now, obviously the people I've been hanging out with lately, that's not their kind of games. They like the more abstracted versions of the strategic games. You still have things like that that get played. Well, I've read the rules for some and not played them, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I wonder if really, you know, is it the game itself that's a barrier to attracting new players, or, you know, to just come right out and say it, is it sometimes the community? You know, because Starfleet Battles has the cadets game.
Right.
But I have never, you know, I've brought some friends into the game. I have never used the cadets game. And the reason for that is simply because you're going to learn a lot of stuff that you're going to then turn around and have to unlearn. You know, the whole, you know, impulse chart and all that, you know, this is the game you're eventually going to play. This is the cadet version, and we're going to play this today, and then tomorrow I'm going to tell you to forget, what, maybe half of it? You know, I mean, it's okay, but at the same time, most of the people I've wanted to play, you know, or wanted to play this game, they kind of already know it's a complex game, and they really just don't want to start off with, like, I had one friend at my last job who wanted to learn Starfleet Battles. He wasn't really interested in FedCom because he thought it was a stripped down version. You know, I tried to correct that, but still, it's like, you know, I don't want to learn the cadet version. I don't want to learn FedCom. I you know, want to learn this, which, you know, that's still going to happen. It's just, it's been a question of schedules, you know, but it's like, you know, do we really need to talk about simplifying Fed Empire or Starfleet Battles? Or do we really need to talk about maybe the approach at a, you know, when a new guy shows up at the door and says, "Hey, what are you guys doing?" You know, is that maybe something where, you know, we have to have, like, not really like simplified rules, but maybe simplified scenarios.
Right. Oh, understood.
Where we say, like, hey, start off with, you know, read these sections of the big rule book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, take these two ships and, you know, that kind of thing. More right. of a hand-holding with the full game than a stripped-down version.
Oh, understood.
But that's just, you know, a thought.
Right. Well, the whole idea of the cadet training manual is to be able to learn by yourself if you have no one around you to help you. Now, I agree that here's the thing. There are certain individuals, usually engineers, who love the complexity, because that's one thing that drew me to SFB to begin with, was its complexity. And what I consider the realism in those interactions. You know, this is a lot of rules, but those interactions make sense. And the reason why you have all those rules is to specify those interactions. But, you know, that was one of the things that drew me into SFB. And I understand that some people are like that. They like the complexity. They like the quote-unquote realism that SFB offers versus FedCom, which is boiled down. So it's simplified so that you can more easily play. Yes, I understand, Mike. Mike is just mentioning that there are some introductory rules that are already in the SFB book. I remember originally learning SFB using the basic set, which was interesting when the first game I ever played, which was the Klingon versus the Fed, and you're using the basic rules. The basic rules, there is no overloads. And when you get to like range one, range zero, you can't fire. You can't fire the photons because you're too close. At range zero, you can't fire unless you're firing overloads. Yep. Mike is mentioning how he was attracted to SFB because it appeared to be a codified system that took into account that all weapons, defenses, and systems shown on film. You know, the whole idea of taking what you saw in film and reverse engineering, which kind of reminds me of Galaxy Quest, where you have the aliens who actually looks at all these historical documents and reverse engineer and say, oh, that's the way how it must have worked. And they got to actually work, which is weird. You know, it's like, wow.
Yeah, what actually attracted me to Starfleet Battles is kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
But you remember the scene in Wrath of Khan after the Enterprise, you know, was greeted by Khan, and Kirk and Spock are looking at the display and there are all the red dots flashing, and yep. He knew exactly where to hit us. Okay, the SSD display reminded me of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm 13 years old, like 12, 13 years old at the hobby store. I'm looking at the box and I see that SSD display and it's like, that was it. I had to have it. And I saved up my money and I got it. Which, okay, so now you understand why it broke my heart so much when, you know, Starfleet Battles Online switched to the new
third gen
format. I mean, it looks nice, but my red dots are gone.
Oh, I understand that, and
so I. But that was my thing. That's what sold me on that game. It probably took me years before I actually could comprehend all the like the big rules and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I was sold from that day.
Oh, understood. But okay. I think with that, we are going to wrap up because it's already getting a little late for me. It's coming up. It's like 10:45. So and I still have to put this thing together. Actually, I still have to record the news portion this time because I ran late because of other things. But anyhow, Andrew, it was a pleasure talking with you.
Okay, and maybe I'll see you next weekend or whenever that is.
That would be great. You have a good night.
Bye. Have a good one.
So, had a nice little discussion about, you know, simplified FNE, where, you know, the basic reason is to hopefully invite other people who don't really appreciate that ability, you know, that they're really, as Mike pointed out in the chat room, the codification of the systems, you know, how the systems interact, and really appreciate all of the rules behind it, you know, and you know, there's some geeks, you know, like me, who really liked that. And that's one of the reasons why I got drawn into SFB, was that was one of the reasons why I really liked it. But I know there's some people who like FedCom. The reason why they like FedCom is because of it's a lot simpler. They don't have to worry about, you know, a lot of these other rules, and, you know, in some cases it's faster to play. Other places, some things just didn't work out, you know. The fleet system, the damage allocation system didn't really speed things up in my mind anyway. It tried, but I don't think it sped up things all that much. And Lord knows, anyone who's played SFB and has taken that big wad of dice, rolled them all on the table, and then said, okay, let's see what kind of damage we did. That joy, that sheer joy of doing that, would never want, really didn't like FedCom when it comes to the damage allocation. Like, okay, 10 rolls. Okay, you got 20 points, 20 internals. Okay, let's get 2 rolls. What? I don't get these massive rolls? Like, no, you get 2. So, anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.